Good morning, everyone. I'm Keval Vora, and today I'll be talking about generic I/O optimization to accelerate disk-based graph processing. This is a joint work with Harry Zhu from UC Irvine and Rajiv Gupta from UC Riverside. So graph processing has become really popular, mainly because it finds its application in various domains, like social network analysis, data mining, and so on. What makes it difficult is that real-world graphs are usually very large. So for example, Facebook's recent post mentions that they have about 1.65 billion active users. So in case someone was to create a social network graph out of this, they would have 1.65 billion vertices and even more edges, right? So these large graphs can be processed in different environments. You can imagine a distributed processing environment using a cluster or a single machine with a lot of memory. An interesting environment is a single machine with limited amount of memory, so you are resource constrained there. And what happens is you use disks for processing. So it is out-of-core processing on a single machine. And it has already been shown that it is feasible and competitive with other processing environments. And also it is cheap because all you need is just a box to run your program. So various frameworks already do that. We have GraphQL and Xtreme, which are popular ones. And these frameworks mainly rely on some disk-friendly static partitions, which are created before processing begins. And these partitions mainly maintain the locality during processing. So processing simply has to orchestrate reads from the disk such that sequential reads are maximized and random reads are minimized. So the techniques that I'll be talking about today are generic enough to be incorporated in any processing system. But we took an example of GraphQL in this paper, mainly because GraphQL pioneered this whole line of processing really large graphs on a single machine in out-of-core fashion. So in GraphQL, the entire graph is split across multiple shards, such that each shard is small enough so that it can be loaded in memory. And this is done during pre-processing, so before the computation even begins. And this shard structure remains static, so the layout does not change as processing goes on. Now, processing of these shards takes place by loading each of the shard in memory, processing it, and then writing it back on the disk. And because graph algorithms are iterative, this loading of shards happens multiple times over the time of the processing. So obviously, this repetitive loading of shards makes the entire process I/O bound. So loading of static partitions is really expensive. In fact, in GraphQL, we measured that up to 88% of the time, it just spends in loading different shards from the disk to the main memory. Also, similar trend is observed in the other system, Xtreme, where up to 80% of the time is spent in streaming through the edges from disk to the main memory. So it is OK if you spend this time to load the shards, as long as we know that the edges that we are loading are really useful. But what we see is that a lot of edges that are really loaded are not required for computation at all. So the good news is there is an opportunity to reduce the amount of I/O that we perform because different edges are really required at different points of time. So in this plot, I'm showing the percentage of necessary edges that are basically required for computation at a given point of time for page rank. So we can see that after the initial phase of about 12 to 15 iterations, less than 30% of the edges are really required. So they are necessary for computation. Others are not even required. So basically, not all edges are always required. But then the challenge is that the definition of necessary edges itself changes across different algorithms. So here I'm showing a plot where I'm tracking the necessary edges across the execution of a program. And I'm showing this for three different algorithms on the same input graph. So we can see that the trend is quite different because different algorithms behave very differently. And hence, there is no static solution which is pre-partitioned that can capture this dynamic nature at runtime. So there is a need to create these dynamic partitions so that the working set can be captured on the fly. But the two main challenges that I'll be talking about today is first, how do we create these dynamic partitions on the fly? And secondly, when we have these dynamic partitions, how do we actually process them? So as I mentioned earlier, I'll be focusing mainly on GraphQL. So I'll be talking about how we create dynamic shards, how we process them, the accumulation-based computation model that we use, and finally some performance numbers and evaluation. So before jumping into dynamic shards, let's look at the shards themselves. So shards are designed so that they maintain locality while processing. So in this toy example, I have 5 vertices and 7 edges, and I'm showing the corresponding shard representation using 2 shards. So these shards will be residing on the disk. And the processing is quite straightforward. It happens across 3 phases: load phase, compute phase, and store phase. So in the load phase, we load the subgraph from shard 0. Once the subgraph is available, we compute the edges and vertices, and the updated values are then stored back to the shards. Then the same process is repeated for shard 1. We load the subgraph from shard 1, compute the edges, and the updated values are written back to the disk. And because graph processing is iterative inherently, this loading and storing happens continuously over time. So it happens multiple times across the execution. So dynamic shards are those whose structure keeps on changing as the algorithm progresses over time. So here we can see, as time goes by, I'm showing different dynamic shards required for different iterations. So the first thing to see is that they start getting smaller and smaller, which is good, because then we have to load lesser number of data from the disk to main memory. And in fact, in this particular example, the dynamic shard for the third iteration only has 3 out of 7 edges. But constantly reorganizing data in order to maintain and create these dynamic shards chaotically can be really expensive, and it can backfire our processing. So the main challenge is, how do we efficiently create dynamic shards on the fly so that it does not negatively impact the performance? So we do that by tracking the edges whose values get updated in the compute phase, and then storing only those edges to the new shards. So we look at how we create dynamic shards using this toy example. We already have the static shards with us, so we begin processing. We first load the subgraph from shard 0. Once it is loaded, we compute the vertex values. Now in this example, let's say all the 3 vertex values change. So the outgoing edges are updated, and they are written to new set of shards. So these new set of shards will boil down to new files on the disk. Then we load the subgraph from shard 1. And let's say over here only vertex E got updated, whereas D's value did not change. So what do we do in this case? Because E got updated, the outgoing edges were also changed, and only these outgoing edges will be written in the new dynamic shards. So note that the new dynamic shards do not have outgoing edges from D. We have eliminated them. Now in the next iteration, we'll use this newly created dynamic shard to begin our processing. So we load the subgraph from shard 0, and in this particular case, let's say only A's outgoing edge got updated. So we only write these updated values back on the disk in new set of dynamic shards. And the same process continues for shard 1. And let's say none of these vertices got updated at all. So none of the outgoing edges also got updated. Hence, nothing gets written to the dynamic shards, and the new shards are even smaller. So you can see that while creating these dynamic shards, the entire process was quite lightweight. Right, we did sequential writes all the time, and we didn't change the overall processing to wait for the writes to happen, because store phase anyways writes the updated edges to the shard. We just write it to the new set of shards. So now that we have these dynamic shards, let's look a bit deeper on how we process these dynamic shards. So as before, we load the subgraph from the dynamic shard for the particular iteration which was already constructed. So we have already loaded subgraph from shard 0. And at this point, we notice that vertex A actually has a missing incoming edge. So the dynamic shard does not have any information about that edge. So how do we go about computing such a vertex which has missing edges? To do that, we simply delay the computation of that vertex by maintaining these delayed computations in an in-memory buffer. And then other vertices already have their incoming and outgoing edges, so we simply process them, and updates are written back to the disk for the new shards. Similarly, we load the subgraph from shard 1, and at this point, you will notice that both D and E have missing edges, so both of them cannot be directly computed. So computations for both D and E are maintained in the buffer, so they are delayed, and nothing gets written back to the disk. So basically, we delayed computation, and these delayed computations are held in an in-memory buffer. But I cannot hold these delayed computations forever. I do need to process them at some point in time. So we do that. We do that periodically in some special iteration that we call shadow iteration, during which we make sure that all the edges in the graph become available. So let's look at how this shadow iteration is performed. Now, what do I need to actually execute or process these delayed computations? I just need two things, right? I need all the edges, and I need all the updated values. So the first question was all the edges. That is simple, because I can just look at the original shard, which has the entire graph structure, and load the subgraph from there. So I have all the edges now. But the second question was, what about the updated values? So where these updated values are actually present, they are scattered across all the dynamic shards based on when they were computed. Sorry. So we simply load all the dynamic shards in the sequence of their creation. And while loading, we read the values and override them. So at the end, we have all the updated values to process the vertices. Now at this point, you'll notice that vertex A has all the information, the edges and the values. So we can simply process it and write the updates back to disk. So A gets out of the memory buffer as well. The same process is done for shard 1. We load the original shard to get all the edges, and then all the intermediate shard to get the updated values. At this point, again, both D and E have all the information that is required to process them. We simply process them and write back the updates to the disk. So at this point, let's review what we have done up till now. We basically start with a graph, and we create static shards before the processing begins. Once the processing starts, we keep on creating dynamic shards to capture the working set. And while this happens, vertex computations get delayed over time. So at some point, we decide to do a shadow iteration where we load all the shards and process these delayed computations. So you'll notice two things here. The first thing is that the shards become smaller and smaller as the processing goes on, which is a good thing, because now I need to load lesser amount of data in the later iterations. The second thing is that even though these shards become smaller and smaller, the negative effect of that is that more and more edges go missing, and hence more and more computations get delayed. So in fact, we saw that up to 73% of active vertices or computations actually get delayed when we simply do this. So to minimize the number of computations that get delayed, we don't create shards for each and every iteration. We create shards periodically so that a lesser number of edges go missing. So at this point, there are two things to observe again. Can we really do something better than simply creating dynamic shards periodically? And the answer to that is actually yes. We can look at a vertex processing. So a vertex either gets really processed or it doesn't get processed at all in case it has any missing incoming edge. So looking at this vertex, if we have even fewer number of edges available, we can use the values coming from these few edges to do the computation and not delay the entire computation at all. So this brings us to our accumulation-based processing model, where we express computations a bit differently. So instead of propagating actual value through the edges, we propagate the change of values across the edges. And this gives us a handle of when to delay different computation based on the missing edges, incoming or outgoing. So let's say in this example, E had a missing incoming edge from D. So before, we simply, even though we had the values coming from B and C, we simply delayed the computation of E in the in-memory buffer. But now, by knowing that we are propagating changes across edges, we can use the values to compute E's new value. And the missing edge anyways represents no change, which means no contribution. So there's no requirement of delaying this computation. Similarly, let's say E has a missing outgoing edge now. So originally, we simply delayed the computation of vertex E. But now, we can compute the value of vertex E and only delay the scattering phase for this computation to the out neighbors. So we require a partial delay in this case. So as I mentioned, we need to express the computations a bit differently, and we have an accumulation-based programming model around this, which is based on the traditional gather-apply-scatter model. And you will see that the two models are very similar. They require very minimum changes. And I won't be going in deep in this, but you can definitely read it in the paper. So let's look at our evaluation setup, and we'll be now talking about the performance numbers. Because we are looking at a single machine-based processing in a constrained memory environment, we simply use a simple Dell 8-core box with 8 GB of main memory. We use 500 GB hard disk drive and 400 GB solid-state drive, but in this talk, I'll be focusing on results coming from HDDs. Our processing environment was Ubuntu 14.04, and we made sure that the file system caches were flushed before every execution so that different executions were made comparable. So we use five popular graph algorithms, page rank, belief, propagation, heat simulation, shortest paths, and connected components. And we use six real-world input graphs, sizes of which vary from 69 million to 6.6 billion. So here, if you note the size to mem column, that's the ratio of the size of the graph to the available memory. And for the largest graph, which is Yahoo Web, it is about 20x of the available memory. So it is really large. So let's look at the overall performance. On an average, we get 1.8x speed up across all the algorithms for different inputs. So I'm showing for five algorithms and three inputs. And it is clearly visible that the algorithms can be bifurcated into two different groups. So the first group has page rank, belief propagation, and heat simulation, while the second group has shortest paths and connected components. So in the first group, we get higher speed ups. We, in fact, get up to 2.8x speed up. And the reason for that is that the workload is not aggressively changing. So it is quite stable. And our dynamic shards are able to capture this working set very well. But in the other half, which is shortest path and connected components, the working sets keeps on changing very vigorously. So there is very less to capture in the first place. And even though we get speed ups, it's only about 1.3x. Now, the main reason why we get speed ups is that our dynamic shards are really small compared to the traditional shards which are loaded. So here I am plotting the normalized shard size for dynamic shard while the execution goes on. And you can see for different algorithms, the size of the shard is really low. It is only about 20% of the original shard. So loading of this basically eliminates a lot of I/O that was happening in the traditional processing. So now that we get these speed ups, let's dig into where these speed ups are coming from. So we look at the amount of data that is read and written from the disk. So in these plots, I'm showing the amount of data that's read relative to what was done in traditional GraphQ. So we see that we get up to 64% reduction in data reads, which is good. Secondly, we also see that we get 54% reduction in data writes, but remember that I had already mentioned that more than 70% of the time is spent in reading the graph. So our major performance boost is coming from reduction in reads rather than writes. The second thing you'll notice is that shadow iterations are I/O intensive. So in this plot, each of the bar has two sections, the yellow and the red part. So the red part is the reads performed during shadow iteration, and the yellow part is the reads performed in the regular iteration. And you can clearly see that the red path is visibly high. It's not really minor. So shadow iterations are I/O intensive because we load all the intermediate shards. But even after including this, because the performance boost is so much greater in the regular iteration, the overall reads decrease, and hence we get the performance. Finally, here I'm looking at the shard size as the algorithm progresses. But this time, it is normalized with respect to the ideal shard size. So the ideal shard size we have designed such that they only contain the necessary edges for at a given point of time for computation. So we are seeing basically how well the dynamic shards are created and how good are they in capturing the working set. So we see that for two of our algorithms, up to 10%, they are only up to 10% higher, whereas for PageRank, it is up to 40% higher. There are more results related to performance overheads and comparison with other systems, which are mentioned in the paper. I won't be going through here. So to conclude, basically with prevalence of big data, out-of-core processing in cheap and constrained memory environment is definitely a promising direction. And while there are a lot of open problems over there, we believe that our work is a step towards improving the overall performance in this domain. Specifically, we see that dynamic partitions do accelerate out-of-core processing, but it happens if you have lightweight creation strategy. And secondly, we change the processing model to accumulation-based processing. So by doing all this, we see up to 76% reduction in the amount of data read, which in turn gives us the performance boost of up to 2.8x. With that, I conclude my talk, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Let's thank you all. Questions?
Edward Bortnikov from Yale. Really nice talk. So how would your results change if you were running the same computation in a distributed environment? How would you, bottlenecks be any different?
So in a distributed environment, you are still doing out-of-core processing? Is that your question?
If you were running this example on a cluster of many nodes.
Right. So if the graph already fits in memory, then there are already optimization in place which only track the active vertices and do computations over it because there are no loading overheads anyways. But in case you are looking at a cluster-based environment along with disks out-of-core processing, this will definitely help because now whatever part you are loading from the disk on each of the machine can be reduced as computation goes on.
Okay. And the number two question, it's well known that in large-scale graph computations, supernodes that have notorious degree are a huge problem. Mm-hmm. So is there any new insight of how your new algorithm treats these supernodes?
So in this work, all the optimizations that were developed, they were oblivious to the graph structure. Mm-hmm. So we never focused on the graph structure itself to get any insights. But there are different works which are already there, which look at the graph structure, and you can basically append such micro-optimizations to this work to actually accelerate even more. So you create the dynamic shards even smartly.
Okay. Thank you.
Dongping Zhang from AMD Research. So I have a question regarding the space complexity of your approach compared with the static partition approach, specifically to the your shadow iteration stage, and you actually need to read all the data from all the intermediate shards. And can you elaborate on the space complexity?
Yeah, so particularly in the shadow iteration case, what happens is you load the original shard because you need all the edges. Now, when you're loading all the intermediate shards, you don't need the edges. You only need the values from those, right? And when you get the values, you simply override them. You don't make a separate copy of the values. So there is no overhead coming from reading multiple shards because I'm not reading the entire shard structure from intermediate dynamic shards. I'm just reading the values from the shards.
And this shadow iteration, does it happen frequently during this whole iteration space? So
It's frequently. So we have different tuning parameters. One is if your delay buffer starts getting really large, which means a lot of computations are delayed and you are not progressing much. So you would do shadow iteration in that case. The other thing that we see is even if the delays are smaller, we still want to process them. So we bound the frequency of shadow iterations by when they are performed.
Okay, thank you.
Catherine McKinley, Microsoft Research. So there's some recent work on using labels, like for the highway network or for the road network, use highways to do the static partitioning. How do you think that those kinds of partitions would interact with your approach, and then doing shortcuts within the smaller partitions?
So these works are basically doing some pre-processing in the beginning, assume?
Yes. So they use the structure of the graph to do the partitioning, and they do the labels like this node is a highway, right?
Okay.
And then for all the highways, they do shortcuts inside so that if you're going from Chicago to Riverside, you have a shortcut there so you don't have to revisit those.
Right.
And so that compresses the number of edges you have to walk over to do a computation, and it changes how you do the partitions. So do you think your work would be complementary with that?
It surely will be, because what happens is that you are doing these shortcuts and the computations in the beginning, and I'm guessing the structure does not change over time when you start doing computation, right?
Not as much.
Right. So what we do is we change the graph structure itself. So if certain parts are inactive, you won't find them in the shards at all. So the static partitioning technique, even though there are optimizations around it, it won't be able to capture the working set like we do, basically.
Thank you.
Hi, Hi, Blake Caldwell from University of Colorado at Boulder. Did you measure the effect of the buffer cache in reducing writes to the disk versus dynamic sharding?
Buffer cache, can you repeat that?
Did you measure the effect of the file system caching mm-hmm. in reducing the number of disk reads versus your technique of dynamic sharding?
Not really. We didn't, but it never became a performance bottleneck, actually, because these shards are large enough to sort of run out of the cache itself. So caches are really small, right? But these shards are such that they fit completely in memory, but not in the caches, and we just go through them sequentially. So locality is anyways not a question for buffer cache here.
Okay, so you've abandoned temporal locality.
Sort of. So,
yeah, okay, yeah. Thank you.
Okay, let's thank the speaker again. Okay.